I'm Harsh Patania. I'm an assistant professor of radiation oncology at Keck Medicine of U of SC. I'm primarily working in our Orange County locations, which is in Buena Park and then Newport Beach.
I'm Dr. Lisa Engvelton. I'm also an assistant professor of radiation oncology at Keck Medicine of USC, working primarily Orange County and USC, Newport Beach and Buena Park. Dr. Bonev?
Hi, I'm Valentina Bonev. I am a breast surgical oncologist at Breast Lake.
So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Bonev. We really appreciate your time. So today, Dr. Matani and I were hoping to talk about breast cancer and specifically the interplay of surgery and radiation for breast cancer. First off, Dr. Bonev, I know you are a breast surgical oncologist. What discussions do you have with your patients who are initially deciding how they want to treat their breast cancer in terms of their extent of breast resection, the axillary sampling?
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate talking to you about this very important topic. So in general, patients can really go down two avenues in terms of surgery. A lot of patients now, the cancers are being discovered at very early stages, stage one and two, small cancers, where oftentimes they can be offered a lumpectomy, where we are removing, as you know, a lump of breast tissue that's containing the cancer and leaving the rest of the breast behind. Alternatively, patients with bigger cancers or multiple cancers in the breast will need a mastectomy. In both scenarios, there is the option of reconstruction. And of course, the interplay of how radiation is going to affect a patient after they get their surgery. Also, radiation can affect how the reconstruction is going to look. So patients definitely have a lot of questions about radiation therapy, which I know you'll definitely go into the nitty-gritty of it. And it is a little bit hard. Of course, we can tell them, you know, side effects of radiation and how it may look, but it's everyone is going to heal differently. Everyone's going to respond differently. You've seen so many patients who've undergone radiation and some of them do fantastic, and then others have severe radiation burns. And there's really, in some cases, there may be some underlying like connective tissue disorder, something else kind of going, maybe they're immunosuppressed from some other disease. And in some cases, it's kind of like unclear why they're having this strong reaction. So sometimes it's a little bit hard to, I guess, conceptualize for a patient, and they don't really know until they've actually undergone it. So that is kind of an issue. And I know we, you know, try and do our best to explain it to them. But just to kind of speak in a little bit general terms, when a patient gets a lumpectomy, they typically will get radiation to the breast. Of course, there are exceptions to that. We can go through that. With a mastectomy, patients don't typically undergo radiation after a mastectomy. But there are, of course, exceptions, like a patient with a more aggressive, larger cancer, potentially cancer in the lymph nodes. So I do try to make sure patients are well aware that just because we do a mastectomy, it does not mean you will not for sure get radiation. We will not know that answer for sure until we get the surgical pathology results, which is typically a week or two after surgery. And then also to piggyback on that, the type of surgery we do, because I get asked this all the time by patients, the type of surgery we do does not affect the if you need chemotherapy or not, or what type of chemotherapy. What the pathologist finds at the time of surgery will dictate whether they need chemotherapy or not, what type of regimen, how long, etc. So that is very important to clarify. But in general terms, a patient with a lumpectomy will need radiation. With in terms of like axillary surgery, like, as you know, that's another large topic to go into. But in general, we're performing a sentinel lymph node biopsy. So we're removing and testing a sample of lymph nodes from the axilla to see if there's any like microscopic disease that has spread to the lymph nodes. Of course, there are some patients who have more advanced disease and there is already cancer in the lymph nodes. In that case, they will usually get chemotherapy before they get to surgery. And so depending how they respond to chemotherapy, they may or may not need an axillary lymph node dissection. So that's a whole other discussion. But in the take-home message is lumpectomy, you'll usually get radiation. And then in both scenarios, lumpectomy or mastectomy, you will get a sentinel lymph node biopsy.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about, because I know this is something that has changed and continues to evolve, is with choosing wisely, is that something that you apply to everybody? Are there other considerations that you make in determining whether you do a lymph node biopsy?
Yeah, that is a great question. Choosing wisely campaign. So you're referencing SSO or the Society of Surgical Oncology guidelines that have been around for quite a few years. I use the Choosing Wisely campaign guidelines like essentially every day I'm in practice with my patients in clinic, determining what type of surgery they need. So first off, for those listening, like please just like type in Choosing Wisely guidelines and you'll see it pop up with the ABIM Foundation and Society of Surgical Oncology. They have recommendations not just for breast cancer, but for other cancers as well and other screenings. So they are so super helpful and they explain things very, very clearly. So what you're referencing is choosing wisely. So we can actually omit doing a sentinel lymph node biopsy in certain patients. So what choosing wisely guidelines, and so again, these are guidelines, you have to take in the whole clinical picture, but what they're summarizing for us is that data has supported that women who are 70 years or older, who have a small stage one breast cancer, that are hormone receptor positive, so estrogen receptor positive, HER2 negative, who have no evidence of disease cancer that has spread to the lymph node. So that means imaging before surgery has been negative. Your physical exam is also negative. For these patients, you can actually take them to surgery and just perform a lumpectomy, and you can actually omit doing the sentinel lymph node biopsy. The thought process behind that is that for someone, a female in her 70s with a very favorable tumor, so early stage one that is lower intermediate grade, so meaning it's not aggressive, the likelihood of the cancer cell spreading from the breast to the lymph nodes is going to be very low for a patient. So if it's going to be very low likelihood that we will find a cancer in the lymph nodes, why perform this lymph node surgery? So again, we're trying to de-escalate our treatment, give the patient a smaller surgery, potentially eliminate some complications they can have from a sentinel lymph node biopsy. And this is very useful to our elderly patients where I say we want to maximize the treatment, but we also want to, if we can, minimize what we do for the patient, but maximize the outcome for them.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. You know, a question that we get asked often is, so since this has been a change and is gaining following among breast surgeons that they're following us, you know, how did this affect how, you know, what our recommendations are with radiation, you know, with the absence of any sampling change what we recommend? And in general, the answer is no. And we do have some data for that, just referencing the SOUND trial, where the majority did get radiation, but there were really no differences in any, you know, local regional recurrence, distant recurrence. And so in my mind, that, you know, that doesn't really change any recommendations from our end. Liz, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
That's such a good point, you know, regarding the SOUND trial. I think generally I feel more comfortable when the patient is, you know, 70 and older, like Dr. Bonav mentioned. But the SOUND trial, the median age was 60. And I think it, when I'm talking to a younger patient who has had omission of a sentinel lymph node surgery, I do get a little more nervous than I would talking to someone who's older. And I suppose that's because I keep in mind that about 13.7% of the people on the sound trial who were randomized to sentinel lymph node did have a positive lymph node, at least with micrometastases. And also keeping in mind that most of the people on the sound trial got whole breast radiation. So there's some concern among us radiation oncologists that maybe the whole breast radiation is partially hitting the axilla, and at least treating level one of the axilla, it may be treating microscopic nodal metastatic disease. And so I think I have talked to some patients about possibly leaning toward whole breast radiation, even if they otherwise meet partial breast criteria. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. You know, that also brings up a good point where the same set of patients that were able to offer omission of sentinel lymph node biopsy when it comes to a radiation setting, in general, they have pretty much any option open to them for many of these patients. And that includes whole breast radiation, partial breast radiation, and even in some settings, you know, based on the data that we have, omission of radiation. And so I do agree with you that in, especially for certain patients that are either younger, they have other characteristics that maybe concern us that they might have a little bit higher risk, we might push them towards whole breast radiation. But I think it is a pretty important discussion to have with the patient regarding all of their options, especially in the setting of, you know, now not having neuropotentially, not having sentinel lymph node biopsy.
Dr. Bonav, have you performed sentinel lymph node biopsies in younger patients since the sound trial came out, or do you know any colleagues who have?
So that's a good question. So you referenced that the median age was 60 years old in this trial. And so it is very important. The sound trial is for patients with small breast cancer, so less than 2 centimeters, sonographically node negative, right? And so for patients who are younger, let's say in their 30s or 40s with breast cancer, they tend to have more aggressive cancers, right? And so for these patients, I'm still performing the sentinel lymph node biopsy. They have a higher likelihood that, again, with their more aggressive cancers, that they will have lymph node metastasis. These patients, especially after a lumpectomy, I know you're recommending radiation for them. So we still need to be aggressive in certain patients. But with the sentinel lymph node biopsy, we have already de-escalated from doing an axillary lymph node dissection, which was very routine a couple decades ago, or even not that long ago. Some surgeons are still doing it, maybe in rural practices. I mean, but it's not indicated that now we have to do axillary lymph node dissections. And now we can do the sentinel lymph node biopsy, which, yes, it is still a surgical procedure, even though it is called a biopsy, which is confusing for patients, but it is a much smaller procedure where we're just taking a handful, maybe 1 or 2 lymph nodes that are just draining the cancer. And we don't have to do this large ax dissection where patients are going to have a higher risk of complications like lymphedema, which can be lifelong debilitating. So I think the fact that, you know, we are able to do a sentinel node and potentially not have to do it in certain patients with these very favorable tumor characteristics, hormone receptor positive, small cancers, I think, you know, that's a win there.
That's such a good point. And selfishly, as a radiation oncologist, I'm really happy that you're doing sentinel nodes, because I feel that a lot of times when the patient has shown up after surgery, and let's say they didn't have a sentinel node, they get really disappointed, understandably, that, you know, maybe I'm leaning against partial breast radiation. So I feel like the same population that perhaps would want less therapy overall, say, initially, it may be very appealing to not, for that patient to not get a sentinel node. They may feel, they may have also wanted the appeal of partial breast radiation. So very happy that that door hasn't been closed. Thank you. And then I guess to that point, I'm very happy that you place clips in surgical beds. And I want to, you know, emphasize how amazing that is, because that doesn't always happen. Have you always placed clips? Has that been, have you seen variations in practice?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great question. So just to explain to the listeners, when you perform a lumpectomy, you're removing a lump, right? The cancer, then you're taking margins. Your goal is to have negative margins, no cancer on the edges of the margin. So I have created a lumpectomy cavity. And the way that I mark that cavity is by, for each of the margin, the walls of the lumpectomy cavity, I'm going to leave little hemoclips, okay, that stay in a patient forever. They don't cause any issues. They're markers. So that when Dr. Matani or Dr. Zane Velton are looking at the patient's mammogram in the future or CT planning, and they're trying to figure out how to target the lumpectomy cavity, where to give that, you know, radiation dose or boost, that's going to be really helpful. And so especially when you're doing the lumpectomy in concordance with a plastic surgeon. So some patients may want to do oncoplastic reconstruction, which, to really simplify it, it's essentially a breast tissue rearrangement that is performed right after the lumpectomy at the same day of surgery. And the goal of the plastic surgeon is just trying to recreate the breast mound and try to make it look as aesthetically pleasing to the patient as possible. The problem with that is that they're moving the tissue here, there, everywhere. There's going to be more scar tissue. So then it's like, wait a second, where's the lumpectomy cavity? There's all this scar tissue. This, you know, where's our target? So I leave those clips behind for the radiation oncologist to guide radiation therapy. I also leave those clips behind for myself. So if I perform the lumpectomy and the pathologist finds, when we're looking at the postoperative appointment, oh my gosh, the cancer is a lot bigger than we expected, bigger than it was on imaging or exam, and we find that margins are involved, then I know where those clips are to guide me. So I will find a clip, for example, on the superior wall of the lumpectomy cavity. I know that's where I need to go to remove some extra tissue to get some additional margins. And then, like I said, the clips are, you know, marking the cavity. So when, let's say years later, we're monitoring the patient, they're getting their routine mammogram, and there's like something going on their mammogram, maybe calcifications, or is the scar tissue, there's something going on, it's at the lumpectomy cavity, you're going to have a little bit of a heightened concern. Is this a recurrence, right? So those clips are, again, going to guide you. They're so incredibly helpful. So yes, it should be routine practice. Of course, I get patients who've had surgery years ago or by some other surgeon, and you will either see there are no clips or you will see like giant clips.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen different sizes of clips. Yeah, so I'm just like, wow, you know. So it's unnecessary. You don't need these mega clips.
They're just really afraid we'll miss.
Yes. So clips are important for, you know, for everyone.
Yeah. And I think that's really underlies the importance sometimes even of us seeing the patient before they have a surgery. You know, there are so many different considerations when breast surgeons are doing surgery, especially with, you know, even with closure and oncoplastic closure. And combining that with the amount of options that we often have for breast radiation, whether that's, you know, whether that's whole breast, partial breast, or omission. You know, I think one of the things that really helps for, you know, with us seeing the patient ahead of time is, one, we can really help calm their nerves. They get a sense of what to expect with radiation and what we're planning. Because I think radiation is something that, you know, when you talk to a patient about surgery or chemotherapy, it's something that they can grasp. But radiation is, from what I've seen, is something that, unless you had a family member go through it or unless you have some experience with it, it is something that seems to be a little bit out there and patients may not know what to expect. And so a lot of times, if we see the patient ahead of time, you know, before they get into surgery, well, we get the chance to, one, talk to them, but also talk to the breast surgeon. And the plastic surgeon to say, what are you planning? Are there going to be clips? Where are the clips? And that can help us to determine and plan ahead to what we're going to do.
I definitely agree with you. Unfortunately, there's just one little caveat, is that insurance doesn't always let us, you know, send, which I don't understand why. We call the radiation oncologists and everyone is, it's a multidisciplinary team. It's a multidisciplinary discussion. I find it so helpful for the patient to meet with all of us. Like some patients, you know, with a small cancer, older lady, favorable features, you know, I want you to see the medical oncologist, even though any type of treatment they may be doing, like tamoxifen, you know, would be after surgery. But I want you to meet with a specialist so you know and you understand, like, I'm going to give you, you know, an overview, but I want you to see the radiation oncologist, the medical oncologist. So when you do start treating with them, you know, you're ready to go. Everything's been set up. You're not just meeting them for the same first time. You're not sort of blindsided as a patient.
Such a good point. And I'm sorry that you kind of get the brunt of having to handle these insurance headaches.
Unfortunately, insurance is dictating where we can operate, who we can operate with, who we can send the patient to. You know, with patients, you know, of course, you know, it's a struggle, and you know, but we do our best and we do everything we can do for the patient.
And to Hirsch's point about, you know, a lot of patients may not know anything about what radiation is. Certainly, I think some common questions we get asked are, you know, am I going to be radioactive after the radiation? And, you know, the answer is no. What common questions do you get, or what common misconceptions do you hear from your patients about surgery for the breast?
One of the biggest questions I get is, if I get radiation therapy, am I going to lose my hair? Chemotherapy with radiation therapy? And to answer that question, no, of course not. And also, not all chemotherapy causes the patient to lose their hair. There are different regimens, right? Different types of, you know, medications that cause that. And patients are, I think, a bit, you know, afraid with the radiation, how it could potentially, quote unquote, deform them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's some patients that are very, you know, concerned about cosmesis, how it's going to look. But coming from a breast surgical oncologist perspective, my main goal is to treat the cancer so it never comes back again. And very close second goal, very close, is, you know, how can we make, you know, the patient happy, aesthetically pleasing? How can they, you know, move on from this and, you know, not have a deformity, right? But I do sometimes see some providers are looking at number two, cosmesis, and not focusing on number one. So of course we do everything we can do, but we have to make sure we're treating the cancer. We're not, you know, skimping around that just to, you know, make it look as pretty as possible when we're not taking care of the cancer.
Exactly. And I think that we've come a long way. I'm sure that we've come a long way surgically, especially in the last 15, 20 years, but we've definitely come a long way from a radiation perspective and being able to deliver less numbers of treatments with the same outcome, treating less amount of breast tissue, and even sometimes in certain settings, specifically for partial breast radiation, using a technique called IMRT to really spare adjacent breast tissue and really achieving the goals that you set out, which is optimizing cancer control while maintaining great cosmesis for our patients.
And so the overlying theme, like you just mentioned, we're de-escalating cancer treatment, but patients are getting treatment and care better than ever now. We can minimize radiation, minimize the type of surgery we do. Patients are not undergoing chemotherapy. Before, everyone had axillary lymph node dissection. Everyone had chemotherapy. Everybody had radiation therapy. Everybody had the works. And the fact that now we can really individualize the care for patients and minimize the amount of treatment they're getting, which is also minimizing complications as well, is fantastic.
Time.
Are there other really big, I guess, changes in breast surgery that you've noticed or seen over the past maybe 10, 15, 20 years?
I think what we touched on earlier is that we're not doing axillary lymph node dissections as frequently. It's mainly sentinel lymph node biopsy. And then the fact that patients are more aware, they're being screened and cancers are being detected earlier and earlier, less than a centimeter. So we can do a lumpectomy, a smaller surgery. Patients recover faster than mastectomy. You know, they just do fantastic with treatment. And I say, you know, this is a little bump in the road, but you're going to do excellent with it. And then you're going to live the rest of your life and you're going to have an awesome life.
I love that. and, you know, I'm kind of excited from, you know, future directions in radiation that we're likely going to be able to omit radiation in more people and to be more focal, as Dr. Mitani said. So I guess what I'm thinking of is that we just had the results of the Supremo trial published, which was looking at women with intermediate risk breast cancer, say a larger tumor and node negative, or a smaller tumor but node positive, maybe higher grade tumors, lymphovascular invasion. And these kind of intermediate cases, I feel like, keep us radiation oncologists up at night, because there's kind of data that can push you either way. And this was very recently published with results that there's no change in survival, which is, you know, wonderful to actually be able to show the data for to patients. Looking forward to also MA39, which is looking at this question as well. Well, I really want to thank Dr. Mitani and Dr. Bonev for their time and expertise. I love multidisciplinary discussions in general, and this one was really exciting. Looking forward to the next episode.